Hello, everyone, and welcome to my podcast. Actually, I'm still smiling and laughing because we already had a great conversation with my guest here. And I don't know now if I should call him Mark or
Mark's
Steven
good.
or
In a fire, you can scream anything, and I will run with you.
because we had this a fun name conversation. But I'm looking forward to have a conversation with Steven Peary that I would love to welcome to my podcast today because he has vast experience in actually directly from Hollywood, and we can talk about the cool stuff. I'm sure there was a lot of amazing stories that you experienced during the life, but also he has a lot of different things that are happening in life, and changing his life and redirection, I believe, or I don't know if I can call it repurposing of our life, right? But it's almost like that. Like we're actually changing the purpose. We're changing how we feel about life. And I love that we started conversation about, your change and what you want to add and give to the world. So let's talk about things and your life and your background and your experience. But let's give so much love today to people because I really love your warmth as well. So thank you so much for being here. And I'm
It
looking
is
forward
really
to
fun to
talk.
be here. Where would you like to begin?
I would love to hear a little bit of backstory because there was a lot of stuff that I think it's exciting for some people, but also probably being I think you were a producer of like Die Hard and Wolverine and
A
like
studio executive. Yeah, for those,
studio.
I was a studio executive. Wolverine and Die Hard. Yeah.
So I think that's amazing, but also there is a part of generalizing or maybe perception about the film industry. I truly believe it has to be a quite toxic because there is probably a lot of people, they fight for their positions and they want to be, high, they want to be there, they want to be connected. So I believe that you have a lot of stories there, but also, just take us a little bit through your life story.
You know, I'll pick up one thing you said, which is you're right. There's a lot of bad behavior in film. And I believe it's for this reason. It's very fear-based because there's not a right answer. It is very hard in a creative field like that, especially when there are hundreds of millions of dollars being bet on the table. And you don't actually know how to make a good movie. Like some of the best filmmakers, best actors, best producers have made movies that are unwatchable, right? And you're like, how could, Steven Spielberg and Will Smith and these guys all get together and the movie's terrible? And then some guy you didn't know from Uruguay makes a movie that's fascinating, right? And so for that reason, because you don't exactly, it's not like math where it's like, no,
One
two
of the
plus two is
secret
going to be
sauce.
four every day. You know, exactly. There's a big element of fear because you don't know what's right. It's sort of like wildcatting for oil, where in the old days it was just like, you know what, the smartest oil guys are drilling here and they come with nothing. And then someone hits, oil over there and they become wealthy. And then that was their first well. So it's a lot like gambling in a way. So it creates an environment of fear, which then brings out sometimes really bad behaviors. And I can't say that I was not part of that, but I did live in it. And I saw it firsthand. It was like, okay, this is one way things work. So, but you wanted backstory. You wanted backstory. So let's talk about
Yeah,
backstory.
let's do that.
So I'll tell you some tidbits of my life that seem to be germane to understand what I'm sharing now. So I was little back east, United States. Both my parents were engineers at IBM. My mom was a systems programmer when there were not a lot of female system programmers. And my
Nice.
dad was a hardware designer. He designed essentially CPUs, like logic chips for mainframes and microcomputers and stuff like that. And both of them had come from real poverty, the poverty that I'd never experienced. So there was a sense in my household of like, you are going to work and do something that you're proud of, that there are no laurels to rest on. And well, I never had what I think my parents had of that question some days of like, where will we eat again? When? I still had that feeling of like, okay, you know what? You need to go and do something, right? So that launched me on a little trajectory. Obviously, mom taught me, a bunch about coding. She was very influential in my young life. And so I was a little code monkey. I ended up going to college in LA, but also got a Thomas J. Watson scholarship from IBM. So I had a job whenever I wanted
Amazing.
it. So I could work during school as like a junior software engineer and make money for the school, which
That's
was great.
amazing. Yeah.
And my life, if anything, has been a series of lucky sort of things that drop in my lap. And then I work really hard to make something of them. So it's not entirely luck, but definitely luck is a huge part of like, hey, you know, you met Alexandra today and she has this great idea for a movie. Oh, let's go make a movie. It's like that kind of thing happens to me a lot. Yeah. Rather than by design, I say, you know, in 6 years, I shall meet Alexandra and she shall have an idea for a movie and I'm planning this thing. It's more just that way it works. But then you work really hard to make the movie, right?
Yeah.
So when I was in LA, SC has a great cinema TV school. I actually almost went to Swinburne and the AFTRS in Australia. I'd been accepted there and then ended up staying in LA and working in production. And in being at USC, even though I was, you know, maybe more technically minded, a lot of my friends were in the cinema TV school. So you end up going to movies with them and talking about movies and debating stuff. And they all wanted to be like Lucas or Spielberg or Scorsese, you know what I mean? Like that's really, so you're in it. And I was in LA when film became digital, when suddenly everyone's like, oh, we can digitize it. We can do it in the computer. And I happened to speak engineer and I also kind of spoke director. So my career took off. I did a bunch of computer generated effects for movies and titles for movies, things like that. I produced the digital effects for Independence Day and we won the Academy Award for that, which is really great. It just, it helps your career a lot, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. So, I mean, it's a group effort with all these things. It's 1,000 people who do it and there's, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it was wonderful for my career.
Yeah.
And the director and producer of Independence and I got along really well. We started a company together to do computer graphics for lots of people's films. It was the first company I founded. We exited that like 4 years later. We sold it to Das Werk in Germany. And it was a great exit. And I thought, you know, foolishly, oh, wow, this is really easy, setting companies up and selling them. And you know, I was like 27, 28 years old. I was like, oh, now what will I do? I'll, you know, and I, you know, but actually still one of my friends was my girlfriend at the time, was a flight attendant for Air France. So I took like 2 years and just sort of saw the world and traveled with her. And it was wonderful.
Yeah.
So did that. Had a moment of, okay, I'm going to wake up and be 30, be 40, 50. And what am I doing? And I thought something was really interesting after doing like 14 or 15 movies, the visual effects. I was like, what about actually making the movie, like helping the movie get made, not just being the guy who helps make the movie. And that meant going and starting a new career, essentially in development in film, like reading scripts, meeting actors, meeting agents and managers and, you know, trying to get stuff made.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that led what you had mentioned and earlier, and I appreciate, you know, you'd read a bit about, you know, my path, but that, you know, working on the Die Hards and the Wolverines and working, producing for the writers of Transformers and Star Trek, stuff like that. Like that was all studio side work. That was all when I was at Fox, DreamWorks and, you know, charged with like, okay, you have to get the next Die Hard movie made, put that together. You have to make the next Wolverine sequel, that sort of thing. Did that for a couple of years. Definitely had a moment on Die Hard 5 where I was like, this is a terrible movie. It's going to get made anyway, just because the studio, I'm serious. The studio's just going to make it. If it says Die Hard, you put out the, like you have a poster behind you. You put out that poster, it says Die Hard. It will make $70 million by Sunday night. It just will.
It's the same with some movies. You can just make, you know, 10 of them.
Look at Marvel now and Lucas.
Lucasfilm right?
was making like a TV series about the Kleenex box that was on the Death Star, you know?
Oh my God, yeah, I know.
So it's, so I had that moment. I thought, you know what? I don't know. I'm going to wake up and be 40, 50 years old, be like, oh, you know, daddy's going to work today, Die Hard 19 to pay for your college. You know, I didn't think that was my future. So I thought, what is it? There's only one other thing I know how to do, which is engineering. I was like, why don't I start a tech company, a startup, and find something that I think is a passionate problem that I could help solve. I had two failed companies. I did two small startups, only raised like $3 million for each of them. Both of them failed. You know, they say, you know, it's a learning experience and all that, but I'm totally comfortable being like, no, it's a failure. There's something I told our investors we were going to try to achieve. I wanted to achieve. It did not achieve that. If we failed that, and that's life. It's not, failure has to be awful, but it sucked, but it is what it is. And, you know, yes, I learned some things from those. I tried not to be, you know, the hero of the Greek tragedy where you repeat your own mistakes until, you know, death.
Trying to learn.
So that's it. And in the course of doing that, and this is sort of the end of, I hope, the setup, and you're going to ask me questions. I'm going to ask you questions. It's going to be very interesting back and forth. But the end of the story is, so in doing those two companies, learned a lot about remote work in this world, which the funny thing is, it was the pandemic that, you know, turned Zoom into a verb that made everyone say, like, oh, remote work, distributed work, asynchronous work, hybrid work. Like all these things were very much like suddenly part of the awareness. In film, surprise, surprise, for 100 years, we've been doing all that.
Yeah,
we just don't call it remote work. It's like the writers are writing, yes, in their homes or in coffee shops or in their writing partner's home, right? You have pre-production where a couple of days a week you're in an office with the location scout or the you know production designer, and then you're off in your home writing and doing whatever.
Yeah.
And then you're on set and it's in real life. And it's that whole thing of like remote to hybrid to in-person on set, going back to hybrid, back to remote. No one in film has ever called it remote period of the film. You know, it's like pre-production or post-production. So that was interesting to me to see like, wow, there are some simple techniques that really apply here because it's not that novel in the film world that I came from. And that's what I you know, love sharing now is there are some principles that are just helpful and kind of fun, you know?
Yeah.
There you go. Long answer.
And I think that's, no, thank you so much for sharing that. I think that's, what is very interesting when you mentioned that, you know, there are people that are writing the scripts and they, you know, work from coffee shops. I think actually what happened, because when you look at the work environment before, you know, it had to be 5 days a week. It had to be everywhere, 48 hours or 49 hours, right, work week. So everything was kind of scheduled and it was 100 years, it was the same thing, right? You had to go to work. You work 5 days a week, sometimes six, and it was normal. But there was no, I feel like there was no creativity. Like there's no time for creativity because you need to change environment. You know, like you need to be somewhere else, right? Like you need to, I love to change environment. I love to just go to different office, or I love to, you know, go to the coffee shop, or I love to go to my clients' offices. I always said like, no, I will come to see you because I love that. And I think just that change, you know, for like being in different environment, it always starts something or sparks something in your brain. So I believe that is also connected with productivity, right? Because you're sharing a lot of tools.
You couldn't have asked a better question because I'll tell you, this is something I saw firsthand and I made note of this. And when I was starting my remote companies, I didn't remember to implement this until I was like, oh, something's off. And then I was like, I knew this. And I'll tell you what it is you touched upon this idea that mentally, or maybe it's spiritually or both, there are certain places that we associate with doing certain kinds of things, you know?
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, I saw this first when it was way back in the Independence Day days, because the writer, director, you know, producer that I was working with, they had written Stargate and some other stuff. And they had always written down at this beautiful white marble villa in the hills of Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, right? And they talked about this. It was a wonderful place to write. Both of them come from very like, you know, well-off families, that sort of thing, right? So they would write down there. And they talked about the light that would come in the morning over the pool and the thing. It just was their creative space.
Love it.
Right? So they were going down. Roland, who's the director, producer, he was like, talking to his assistant, Joey. He was like, okay, you know, we have to go ride. You book the house, blah, blah, blah. Joey comes back and she's like, it's already booked. Like Airbnb or whatever. It was like already rented. And around the office, everyone's like, oh my God, what is Roland going to do? What is Dean going to do? And Roland called his entertainment attorney, John Deemer, who's a fantastic attorney. I was like, John, you must buy the house. He bought the house over the weekend. Monday, they were writing there. I do not know where the current renters went, but they were not in that house by Monday. That is how important it was for them to have that feeling. Here's where we were. And I'm not saying it has to be beautiful. Like, for example, when I was producing with Alex Kurtzman, Bob Worsey, we're also great guys. They met in college. You know what I mean? It was a very different experience of the meeting. So when they had to go off and like Transformers 2 was due or Star Trek 11 was due and they had to buckle down and write for 2 or 3 weeks, they had their assistant rent a room at the Universal Hilton, which I'm just saying is not like a luxury hotel. It's the Universal Hilton. But I think for them, that experience of one of them sitting on the edge of the bed with the laptop, another sitting at the desk on the laptop, it evoked like a dorm room. I think it then brought them back to that creative space, which was very different than Roland Dean's creative space. But it's that thing of like your brain gets kind of trained to, oh, this is where I do this sort of thing. And it's really helpful, whether you're leading a team and you're like, okay, you know what? These spaces have certain associations, or you're the contributor and you're like, this is my space for this or whatever. So anyway.
Yeah. No, I love that because I think people don't have time to listen to themselves, to what actually their body or their brain need. Mm-hmm. And I think like I'm going like, yes, I'm on the big table computer right now, but I can, you know, after our meeting, I can take my laptop and I go usually out and then I go to kitchen. Then I go like, I need to actually change through the house even when I'm working from home.
Right.
And I think there is something I feel different at every place. Like when I'm in my office, like a real office,
yes,
it's just so different how I feel there. I almost feel like in a normal office, like the office, I feel almost awkward because it's not natural, because I know my personality, I don't like offices.
What about times of day? Do you notice that your brain works on different things better at different times of day?
Yes. For example, in the morning, when I start to do something, I can actually focus really well. So I get to tasks sometimes, and it can be like harder things, right? So I'm so that you were mentioning the, you know, Eat the Frog, the first thing in the morning, right? So it was the book. And I was like, I always teach my clients, like, Eat the Frog, like, do something hard in the morning because it's easy, because your brain is just like so good in the morning.
Yes.
And if you call me speaking even in the evening, I'm like, I can't even think, guys. Just what I'm
So yeah, it's 9:30 at night here, so watch out what you say.
Oh wow, great. Let's but see where we go.
I will mention this is there's a lot of writing, there's a lot of research around this chronotype sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I am like you are in the morning, I jealously guard that time because I can get through so much of it. There's actually a famous screenwriter, this guy Ron Bass. He was an attorney who turned screenwriter. And he had this famous practice where in the morning he would get up early. He would not talk to his family. His kids, you know, would get up, get ready to go to school, and he wouldn't talk to his wife. And he just said to them, listen, when I get up, if I talk to you, what are you on for cereal? Oh, get out the door. Did you do your homework? If I talk to you, I can't hear my characters' voices in my head. I can't write the dialogue.
Wow.
So in the morning, he would always write dialogue. Now, this is the guy who wrote My Best Friend's Wedding, who wrote Amelia, who wrote all these movies. You get, you know, Julie Roberts and Brad Pitt and, you know, Redford to do your movies because the dialogue is so good. They're like, I would want to say that. Those are great lines, right? And that was his thing. He's like, that his time is sacred in the morning because it's the only time I can write dialogue.
It's almost like he reset probably during the night and he can just fully focus on that. And I think that's amazing. And I think, rested brain is so important. But I will probably ask you, because I know there is a lot of stories you have with remote work and, you know, like all these people on movies. So I will probably pick on that. Like, what did you learn from a few different stories maybe about, you know, managing people, making them perform the highest basically and you know, produce the high quality work? Because I think that's required.
That's actually a really great segue from what we're talking about, because one of the things I know, actually, I have two stories that come to mind. Let me start with this one, which is one of the things I did notice is that the leaders that understood that the ideas are the work that moves the company forward, not signing purchase orders and not, you know, filing the stuff, but the stuff that moves the company forward, we're like, oh my God, we launched this thing and it's changing the course of our company, right?
Yep.
That comes from deep work. That doesn't come from, well, I have 5 Zooms today. In between the Zooms, I have like 42 minutes. In those 42 minutes, I'll do something meaningful. No, you won't. You know, maybe you can return your emails or your Slacks or your Teams. Good luck, right? And the leaders that said, you know what? Why don't we all have a deal? We're going to block out this 2-hour or 2.5-hour, whatever thing in our calendar. During that time, there's no expectation we're going to be responsive to each other, right? There's no, oh, I need to ping Alexander. Hey, what was the meeting notes from the thing? I'm not going to do that, right? Or if I do that, it's with the understanding that I know you're not going to respond until the end of that period, right? And if you can do that with your team, number one, you have to have a team, you know, that you trust, because if no one's going to talk, you're trusting someone's not going windsurfing or going to their yoga class in that time, right? So let's just say that. If that is the issue, it's a hiring problem more than a focus problem. Okay.
So I have 3 hours. I'm just going to use
it. Right, exactly. Like, I don't know. So that thing I've seen very well done. I do it in my own company, which is just 9 to noon. I don't book interviews. I don't book any kind of interactive thing.
Yeah.
And even, you know, the platform that I developed, when you go into a focus session, we hit play and the music begins and the coach helps you, it sets your Slack to away so that anyone who Slacks you gets a little message saying, oh, you know, Alexander's in a focus session, she'll get back to you. That way they don't expect to hear from you. You don't feel the pressure of, oh, I need to respond to those Slacks. People think I'm ignoring them. They know it's good, right? And that is both as an individual contributor, as a team leader, that respect for deep work. And like Cal Newport has written fantastic stuff on this. You know, Mihai Csikszentmihalyi, who wrote Flow and where we get the name Flow States for that kind of like incredible writing that they've done. If there are things that I'm saying that are smart, they're not mine. It's just because I've read the books and I try to bring some of that knowledge down, right? So that's one thing. I'll tell you a very different story about creativity that was taught to me when I was 20.
Okay.
So when I was just getting out of college, my first sort of like full-time job outside college that got into film was a company that did trailers for movies. And did a lot of the Warner Brothers, Village Roadshow, and Buena Vista, like Disney movies. Yeah. So at this point of the story, I was running the writer-producer department, which means we would get in rough cuts of movies. Oh, we have this movie with Robert Redford coming out in the fall. And I would choose a producer, a writer-producer, to watch this rough cut, write a trailer, and we'd start the process with the studio going back and forth, right? So it's very simple. So the company is owned by these two guys, super smart, one of whom is sadly dead, who was like a mentor to me. And the other one, whom I was not that close to, but is really talented, still friends, and they're very well respected. Been doing this for like 20 years, multiple networks, multiple studios. So the studio's company. So Jeff comes to my office, and he always called me Stevie. Don't know why. He's like, Stevie, you know Bart? And I was like, Bart, like the guy in the vault that delivers the tapes. Yeah. I think I've been in the elevator with him. Yeah. He's like, you ever give Bart a movie to write? Bart, the guy in the vault? Like, no. Where are you going? I don't get it. Right. He's like, I just have an instinct about him. I think give him a movie and see if he can write a trailer. And I was like, you've been doing this for 20 years. I'm the idiot who just started doing this. Okay. Got it, boss. So I gave him, you know, some Warner Brothers B title. I don't remember what it was, but it had like a month deadline. So he came back after a week, was like, I can't do this. We could give it to a pro who'd bang it out, right? So Jeff comes to my office 2 days later. How's Bart doing? I was like, I haven't bugged him. I don't want to stress him out. He's never written a trailer before. I'm like, I'm going to let him watch it for the weekend. I'll talk about it on Monday. He goes, okay, Stevie. Okay, that's cool. So what else did you give him? I was like, Jeff, he's never written a movie before. I didn't give him two movies. He goes, Stevie, let me explain something to you. It's always about the other thing. And I was like, what? He goes, if you give Bart one movie to watch and write a trailer, he's going to sit there staring at it with little beads of sweat coming down his temples. And he's going to write the most obvious B version of that trailer ever. Because the part of your brain that does the, you know, ooh, what about chocolate and peanut butter? And like, where did that idea come from? He's like, that part only gets to play when the front part is thinking about something else. So if you don't give him a second movie, he's never going to have something else to focus on and have the great idea and actually write a decent trailer as opposed to write some derivative shit that you don't want to see. And that I was like, yeah, I was like, oh, okay. I can't tell you in my film career and then in my tech career how many times I've seen Jeff proven correct. And there's even a really good book about it called The Net and the Butterfly, about the neuroscience behind what Jeff told me. It was written by Olivia Fox and Judah Pollack. And I'm just this 20-year-old kid sitting in a little dinky office in Hollywood. And he like dropped it on me. And I was like, okay. And man, that he was, I've seen so many writers. I mean, the writers get $1.5 to $2 million a script. Like these are top of the, you know, sort of food chain. They do this. And if you've ever experienced it like I have, where it's like, why do I have this great idea when I'm driving, when I'm in the shower, when I'm washing the dishes, I'm going for a walk, something like that.
Yeah.
It has to do with like your executive mode and your default mode network, where it's like, you kind of have to tie up the executive, almost like the adult in the room. You have to tie them up doing something busy. So the default mode, like a baby, can go around and be like, oh, what is, you know, oh, huh, how does this work? You know, what does this taste like? Because your executive mode network wouldn't do it. It would be like, here's what you should do. Yeah. And just sort of linearly do it. That's another thing. Like if you're a leader and you need creativity, there are techniques where you do get outside yourself, get your team outside itself.
Yeah.
To come up with that weird idea. And some of the ideas are stupid and bad, right? But mixed in there might be the thing where you go, that's what we should do.
Yeah. And I love that. I think, yeah, because we can't become creative when we are in the same environment. We are working on the task all day and we are under stress and pressure. And yeah, I had a retreat and I gave this, that was funny because there was only all male, like there was like seven guys. And I was like, I'm so sorry, but I have one weird thing for you. You don't need to dance. You don't need to do anything crazy. Like, you know, you can see on the retreats, you know, people
dance
naked and stuff. We don't do that. But I said, I will actually make you draw. And they're like, oh, seriously? It was so much fun. I couldn't believe when they get into zone and, you know, they chatted together, they work on their values and they started to draw and they started to present what they draw. Even they were like, oh yeah, this is me doing this, that, like they were just talking about their story. And I was crying, they were crying because we couldn't believe how much creativity was there put on the paper in, you know, 2 hours and how much heart it was on the paper. It was like, how much, you know, how do you put, and there was like people draw, you know, the guy with muscles and
red. That is incredibly cool.
See, honestly, it was like small, those, you know, small signs. And that's me on the beach doing the gym. And I was like, wow. And it was honestly, I never, ever was expecting something like that. Yeah. The stories, you know, from like imaginations of the day, perfect day, you know, in the future. It was amazing. So yes, I see that part of brain, and also when it's activated, you know, I believe you're also improving and you become better as well, because, you know, you're creating, you're expanding. And yeah, just people had a lot of emotions around that. And that's such a beautiful mode to work from. So yeah, I love that. And it's a great story. And I was going to ask, because there's so many things you're doing right now that we actually didn't talk about yet, but I will be curious, like, because, you know, we talk about film and we talk about a lot of amazing things that, and people that you probably, you know, met on the way. And that's for some people, you know, big dream, you know, to see all these actors and all these producers. But you decided at one point that, you know what, I don't want to be there, or, you know, like something needs to change, because you kind of tapping into, you know, a few different things. And you mentioned that you have different company as well. So I will be curious, like, what was the point when you changed maybe a little bit of direction? And,
you know, I can tell you, it's kind of a painful thing, which is I was at DreamWorks and there are a lot of bad movies, but I'll tell you, it's not that people set out to make a bad movie. Most people think that they're going to make a good movie. It just happens to be, it's really hard. You need a lot of pieces to line up and some luck. So even like smart people try to make a good movie, it doesn't always work out. And what was the interesting thing at DreamWorks was, again, run by a filmmaker. When I was there, it was Steven and Stacy running it. And there's definitely a sense of like, go home tonight and see if you can make your project 1% better. And I got recruited really hard by Fox, like double your salary. We'll give you like the Die Hard franchise to run. I grew up watching the Die Hard movies. I'm going to be the guy running and make it. This is amazing, right? The Wolverine franchise, right? You know, it's a bunch of stuff where I was like, oh man, do I do this? Because I really liked it at DreamWorks, but I was like, this is an amazing time. There are not that many Die Hard movies that will get made. I'll get to make one or two of them, right? So I went to Fox and it was a real value and cultural mismatch for me. And I remember my boss, the chairman of Fox Film Entertainment, and I just did not agree on like what good meant. And I knew what good meant at DreamWorks. And I remember it was more a feeling of like, go home tonight and see if you can make your movie 1% cheaper.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not super inspiring.
That is not.
You know, the idea that it's like, we know how much Die Hard will make, whether or not it's good. So if you just make it for less than that number, it's a safe bet and we don't really care. It's not show art, it's show business.
It's run business from fear, right? That's weird.
Yeah, if fear, and just it's a defensive game, you know? And to his credit, my boss had been there 14 years, right? And he was very proud of that because He was the guy who greenlit Alien versus Predator. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you get where he's coming from. It's like, it's a commercial industry. And I had a moment around Die Hard 5 where I was like, I can't stand the thought of just spending my life here doing this.
Yeah.
And my boss is equally, you know, uninterested in me. He was just like, you're trying to make movies, not like what we make here. Mm-hmm. And that was when I thought, what do I know how to do? Where could I have some agency over what I'm going to do? And that was like, do a startup, probably a technical startup, because even though I don't write the modern languages, it's been years since I've written code, I still understand engineering. I think like an engineer. So I was like, that's the logical thing I should go do. And I left this job, a senior executive, you know, vice president at 20th Century Fox, which from the outside looks like a great job. A lot of people were like, you're leaving. There are 30 of those jobs in the world.
Like, you have crazy. One of them.
And you're going to go do like some little company where you have to go raise like $1 million, $2 million, $3 million to do it. You're working on $200 million movies. And you're now going to try and cobble together $3 million, you know, like $100,000 at a time from all these angels. And you're going to go do what? Solve what? You know? And it was crazy. And
it is quite crazy decision, but it's what you found in your heart, right? Like, it was made from values perspective. And I think that's probably very early that you decided to do that, because a lot of people don't do it till 50s, 60s, you know, they stay in
the It is true. And I'll tell you, the two companies right out of Fox both failed. Mm. And it was embarrassing. I felt a lot of shame. I moved to New York. I left LA for a couple of years because I just hated bumping into friends at the dry cleaners, at coffee shops, at dinners. And like, oh, Steven, how's your company going? Actually, terribly. I'm probably going to close it. You know, it's like, it feels awful.
Yeah.
So
that feels,
I was
hard,
like, I just want to get out of here. So I got here for a couple of years, and it ends up, that's how I met my wife. I moved to New York and she was there and we did yoga together. And one day I talked to her.
That's amazing. So it's supposed to be. That's great. So
who knew?
So what is in your life now? Like, you have all these learnings about, like, I love when you talk mm-hmm. about values. So that's important. And I think that's mm-hmm. the part of the leadership, right? So if you actually are able to lead the teams, I think you need to have that base, right? Like, you need to understand the values and how to lead people. And you have so many stories and you met so many people and you start companies. And what is now? Like, I know, those fail, and what do you do now? Like, what is in your role? What is your vision? What is the future?
Something that I, having been, you know, a worker bee and also been the CEO and founder of some things, something that I believe is that when you are the leader of an organization, there are really only two things you get to do. And if you try and do more than them, you're making a mistake or you're fooling mm-hmm. yourself. You get to set an agenda. Here are the things that our company needs to do. We need to solve this problem. We need to you know, do this. You set an agenda and you set a style, a tone, like a culture.
Culture. Yeah. Yeah.
That you can't do the hands-on work, really. You can't do micromanaging people. You have to hopefully hire well. But what you do is you say, we're marching this direction and this is how we're going to meet people and treat people that we meet.
Yeah.
And when you, for example, right now, what I'm doing is all the lessons that I've learned about productivity for remote work. By the way, I found out I have ADHD, like medically diagnosed, which probably is why I'm so interested in how to focus, how to block distractions, all that. So I created a focus app, like a flow state app that has a wonderful community in it and all this. And we can talk about that. But the thing that I believe in creating these kind of tech products is when you do set a tone or a culture or a set of values in a company as a leader, you can feel it in every pixel of the product. When you're a user and you're using something, you can tell if someone had care. You can tell if the organization behind it was like, how can this pixel be delightful? Yeah. And you can feel if it's like, hey man, I'm an overseas contractor. I don't care. It's a button. Okay. It's a button. You can click it and it works. You can feel that. The difference between, I want to delight you, and it's functional. It's fine. You know, buy it. Don't buy it. I don't care. I don't really care about this company. I don't care about you, the user. You can feel that. So that's what we do. I have a very small team. But that's what I'm really proud of, is like when you use our product, hopefully it helps you be happier. It helps you be more focused, feel self-fulfilled. And you just feel like every interaction with it, every click, there's some care that went into it. Like, how could this be beautiful for you? That's what I do.
Yeah, and I love that. I love what you said, because I was speaking on LA Tribune a few times, and they asked me like the final tip, you know, or final thing, final words, and I'm always sharing something that really stuck with me, and it's the energy walks first in the room before your words, because people know like everything. This has energy around. Everything has
Yes, agreed.
Magnetic field, right? So we are actually energy. And if you are in, you know, stress, jealousy, anger, you don't like your job, it's actually connecting with the things that you're creating, whatever it is. It can be service, can be product, can be environment, and it's influencing other people. And that's proven by science, right? Like we are actually influencing each other on a cellular level. So how big is that? And we don't talk about it. We don't talk about it day to day. We should talk about that in every team, every culture. We should talk about that, because it's not only about, you know, like, oh, we have to have these values, amazing values on the wall, and we try to collaborate. It's not bad, but what energy you're bringing in the collaboration, right? Like
it really is.
We are being.
Do you know that experience, like when you're sitting somewhere and you can feel someone enter the room behind you?
Oh yes,
And it's just there's no rational way. It's not like you heard them or you smelled them or you saw them.
Feeling.
But you could tell who it is. Like the energy is different of like your mom walked in or your girlfriend walked in or your enemy walked in. Like it's just that thing. And you're right. It comes through.
Yeah.
You know, and I think this is, I often use a similar metaphor with DNA. It's like when you create a product, there's a lot of the founder's DNA that's in the product, and you can evolve it. You can grow it. You can nurture it. But at the end of the day, it's very hard to change the DNA. Like if you look at Facebook, it will always be face mash. It will always be when Mark was like, I hate women. They won't date me. I'm going to make a site where I scrape their photos so we can ridicule them online. That was the genesis of Facebook. And that's all hidden and whitewashed now, but you can still feel it in the site. It's a site. It's not about making you happy. It's about selling your life to an advertiser.
Yeah.
And it lies that it's about connection and like grandmothers sharing photos with their kids, you know, no, you know, and that's the DNA. It will never change because that was baked into the DNA. Same thing with Evan and Snapchat. You go down the list. Like this is.
I love that. You know, actually, there is something that coming up. It's coming up because when I see a lot of different people, they started companies, you know, 5, 10, 15 years ago. And you can see they're doing the same thing, but they kind of changed the company name and brand. Because they grew, right? Like they changed, they actually developed and they became new people. And suddenly the company has a lot of success. It's almost different, totally different, because it has different charge, different DNA. I love that you said that because it's so true. So for perspective, go.
Yeah, so I'll tell you, the code base that I adopted to build the Suka company was another company called Centered. And it was very proficient. It was built well. But it didn't have a soul. It was very like pixel perfect, very well engineered and all that. And what I saw was like, this should not be about the tools. Like the tools are there, but this should be about the community. This should be about how people support each other and relate to each other and all that. And actually, I'll tell you a funny story, how the name, the Suka company, which is a weird name, let's be honest, how that came about was, I told you, Laura and I met in yoga, right? So I needed to name this new company. We were going on our honeymoon and I said to Laura, I have every bad name in my head. I've been trying to think of a name of this. It's like what the thing with Bart, right? Where it's like Bart's going to write a bad trailer. So I just come up with bad name. Focus flow state distraction free app number 4, you know, like just awful stuff, right? And
that's funny.
I said to Laura, you know, maybe these 10 days when we went to Bali, which is, you know, yoga barn and all the yoga stuff is fantastic there. So I was like, maybe this is a gift from the universe, because these 10 days, no one's going to bug me to like approve the purchase order for the staplers. No one's going to bug me to like update the AWS settings. You know what I mean? Like everyone's like, leave them alone. Right. So I was like, for 10 days, you and I will eat, hang out, do yoga, blah, blah. Maybe my unconscious mind will bubble up a name. So she's like, okay, cool. That would be an amazing intention to have, you know, while we're here. You're right. Totally right. And I said, I think the thing I want to do on the first day is let me ask a couple of these early users if they'll talk to me like for 10 minutes and just tell me what's their favorite thing, like what do they love? And maybe that'll seed my thought. Laura's like, I'm going to the pool, but you enjoy your Zooms and I'll see you at dinner. Right. So I was like, okay. So I put out a little thing to the group. I was like, does anyone have 10 minutes today? Three people said yes. Two of them, I asked all the dumb questions. I was like, hey, Alexandra, thanks for chatting with me. You know, what's your favorite feature? Do you love the music? Do you love the smart assistant? Do you love the timer? You know, what do you love? Right? Third guy, I was going into the wrap up. It had been like 8 minutes. I was like, thank you so much. I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me. And he said, Stephen, you asked the wrong question. Oh, okay. You know, what was the right question? He said, you should have asked me, why do I pay you? And I was like, it's like 30 cents a day. Like, our app is super affordable. Yeah. I hadn't really thought that was a big deal. He's like, let me tell you something. At 3 o'clock, I can be playing with my kids. They're 2 and 4 years old. Or at 6 o'clock, I can be down to myself and like, where the hell did the day go? And and the difference is, did I open your app in the morning? So I pay you because my kids are not going to be 2 and 4 forever. And I want to have those memories in those 3 hours. Okay. Wow. Thank you. So I go to dinner with Laura. I was like, I met a guy who is more articulate about what I'm doing than I am. And this is what he said. That's awesome. And Laura was like, that's really good. Like, you know, what he said, like, kind of hit me, right? I was like, cool. We're brushing our teeth, going to bed that night in the hotel room. And Laura looked at me. She said, you know, in yoga, we hear all these yoga, Sanskrit, you know, sukha, yeah, dharma, karma, you know, satya, you know. Yeah. She's like, he's describing sukha to you. He's trying to tell you what the universe is trying to tell you through him is all these tools that you are building. This is the pathway that you're paving. The goal is not the tool. The goal is sukha. He's saying, I want to be self-fulfilled. I want to be happy. I use your platform to achieve happiness in my life. And that night from bed, I checked on my little phone, the domain, the happiness company, the Sukha company was available, and I bought it. And that's how we named the company.
Yeah, that's awesome. I loved it. And I actually love that you shared the story about that, because I was going to ask, because it's a very different name. And I was thinking, it's like, I'm sure it's coming somewhere there.
That's a name that weird. There has to be a story.
It will be definitely.
Yes. And in Slavic languages, not a good word.
Yeah, I know.
Yep, you know.
But also, it's kind of okay word, because it also means the female from dog, so it's okay. So,
right. Definitely. Friends pointed that out to me, and I was like, you know what? Anyone who knows me knows how I meant it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love, it's a beautiful story, and I think it's beautiful that someone actually share, again, that was heart to heart, right? It shares something that was true value, and true value is always intrinsic. It's always, you know, it's love, it's connection, is meeting someone, having real conversations. All those things are most important. Spend time with kids, right?
Yeah.
Having the moments, having the memories. Because what we will, you know, regret when we are dying, what we will regret? That we didn't spend more time with people, because we just love people.
Yes.
And I think we're forgetting that so many times in a day. We are disconnected. So I love that reminder. So what actually, or how people can find you, how people can maybe use your application, because you mentioned that it is application. So tell us more about that.
Number one, it is very easy to reach me. My email address is quite public. It is stephen@thesukha.co, the Sukha company. So thesukha.co. If anyone has a question, it doesn't have to relate to my company. It doesn't have to relate to me. But if they're like, oh, you mentioned Cal Newport, or is there something I can read? Or tell me more about flow states. I do my best to return every email in 24 hours if I'm not traveling or sick. So if someone has a question, I'll respond, send you a blog post to read, send you a book. It is not going to be a 19 paragraph story of my life, because I don't have time to do that. But I will respond to you if you're like, I want to learn more about that thing. Mm-hmm. And if someone says, oh, you know what? I do have a trouble in the morning getting started and I procrastinate. Or at the end of the day, I do have that feeling of like, I didn't get it done. I'll get up tomorrow early and work on it. If you have those problems, which I do, that's why I created this. There's a 7-day free trial for the platform I built. No credit card. There's no like, oh, if you forget to cancel, we bill you. You don't have to. All you have to do is your name and your email. You can be using it in 10 seconds. And it just simply is something to say, when you have your focus time, as Cal Newport would say, your deep work time, block out an hour or two, hit play in the Sukha, and just see what you get done. See how you feel at the end of 60 or 90 minutes. That's why we have 96% retention month over month. Because if you enjoy what we do it really well. So what's interesting with our metrics is people either leave, they try for 5 minutes and they leave. They're like, I don't know what this is. And they're gone. Or if they use it 1 or 2 days, they use it for years.
Yeah. And I think that's really great feedback because there are people they can, you know, I guess maybe when you look at some not technical people, you know, they can't use applications. And it's very normal. We realize that as well in everything what we do. It's just normal thing. People just don't like it. People just don't want new technology. They don't want to learn new things. But yeah, if someone get it, it's that's lovely to see that they're there forever. And I think it's also the love you're bringing in and passion and something that is very important to you. So the final question, if you can leave
Okay, this is gonna be a good one.
I was just thinking because we kind of didn't really spend time to talk about tricks and tips, even though we talk about, you know, frog and talk about the focus time and we created a little bit of understanding, you know, a little bit about flow state, but what it will be for people when they procrastinate or they have hard time to be productive, what you will advise, what you will give them as some tips that you're using?
Okay, I will, because you are describing a problem that I have. I procrastinate, I get overwhelmed. I will tell you one very concrete thing that I learned about myself and in talking to hundreds of people in our community in Suka, I realized how common this is, which I call it the cold start problem, which is, you tell yourself tomorrow at 9, I'm going to get started, 8:30, 9:30, whatever time.
Yeah.
And yet at 9, you don't really start. You don't start for 15 minutes, 30 minutes. Maybe you scroll through your emails, you return some emails, you look at the news. There's something there. And initially I made up reasons why I was like, oh, I should throw in a load of laundry before I start working. I should read the news. And I realized that procrastination really comes down to two kinds of overwhelm. It was usually looking at my task list and saying, there's so many things, there's 17 things on here. I'm almost paralyzed, not knowing where to start.
Yeah.
Right? Where do I begin? I can't do 17. So it's, you don't start at all because there's so many things, or one of those things is so massive. Like I always joke about, you know, a task is not write your book. You know, that's not a task you're going to do today. So that was one of the things we did, is we built a smart assistant that when you start your day says, you know what, Alexandra, I know you have 17 things to do. Let's pick the three you're going to do now. And then when you start your session, it only shows you those three things. So you don't feel overwhelmed. You're like, oh, I can do this. I can do this. And if there's something on there you choose, it's like, you know, write my book. Your smart assistant says, you know what? I love that. Ambitious. But what if we make a goal of outline chapter three? I know you did chapters 1 and 2 already. What if today you just outline chapter 3, and then you can say, oh, when I was driving yesterday, I did have that idea, the chapter, I can write chapter 3, and you get it done. And you know, like you're saying, like, eat the frog, that feeling of getting stuff done, the momentum builds.
Yeah.
It really feels great. That cold start thing I have bad. And this helps me where it just feels like, oh, I can get going. This is achievable. And then once you start doing a couple, it feels good.
I love that. Yeah. And honestly, I super agree. If you see my calendar and my book, what I'm doing actually, and that helped me, I actually ordering the book always from the US, and it's, I think it's Freedom Mastery, but it's so beautiful because it actually gives you the idea of 5 top priorities for the week. And after that, it gives you like a top priority for each day. And I realized that we are tasking ourselves, and that's what you said. And I love that because you mentioned, you know, the writing the book is not a task, like that's massive, right? Like that's project,
right?
Basically.
Yeah.
So task will be the small things between that. But also I realized that when you write something a little bit specific, but it's still just like a broader task, has some small things underneath, then you can have only 3 for the week. Because, you know, underneath of that is like a few small things.
Your little subtasks. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's actually very interesting. I love that. And prioritizing. Yeah. Like having that one thing that you can do right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that is my advice. If you want one prescriptive thing, which is in the morning, acknowledge your overwhelm and get over it. Like find the 3 things you need to do.
Yeah.
Or if there's something on there that's just so big, it overwhelms you, say, well, what's the one thing I can do in half an hour? What can I do?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I love it. So acknowledge and choose 1 or 2 or 3 things that you can do. That's all. Yeah.
Yep.
Super simple, right? And we still get overwhelmed.
You still get overwhelmed, but you know, it's like a muscle. It's like the more you use it, the more it just becomes second nature. And if you focus on at 3 o'clock, I'd like to be doing the thing I want to do. And I don't have the pain at 6 o'clock of beating myself up and feeling down. it helps you at 9 a.m. say, you know what, I should do this now because it's going to pay off this afternoon.
Yeah, love it. Thank you so much for sharing all your wisdom and experience and your story.
The little stories, the fun little silly stories I have. Yes, thank you for having me on.
I think there is so much more. I believe there will be so many more stories that you kind of didn't tell us yet, because I know people don't like to go too much too deep. But yeah, absolutely, it will be beautiful to meet you again and talk about
that. Would be great.
Where your company is moving, how are you progressing with your beautiful application and your company, and how you enrich the community around you. So mm-hmm. for everyone who is listening, I will share your details. I will share your email mm-hmm. or website so people can actually find it. People can try it. Mm-hmm. People can try it for 7 days for free. So I'm sure you will be enjoying this beautiful productivity and love tool. I would say love tool because we're giving ourselves love, and we will have time to give love yes. to everyone around us. So thank you so much. Have a beautiful evening or afternoon. And I'm really grateful for your time here. Thanks.
Alexander, thank you so much. And everyone listening that made it this far, thanks for listening. I hope it was fun.